Okay, we're continuing and possibly finishing the last chapter, chapter 37, of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. You ready? Harry's trunk was packed. Hedwig was back in her cage, on top of it. He, Ron, and Hermione were waiting in the crowded entrance hall with the rest of the fourth years for the carriages that would take them back to the Hogsmeade station. It was another beautiful summer's day. I really miss the summer, by the way. I haven't missed it as much as I do this fall because of Frisbee, I think. It's just so cold and dreary.
I like it. It's fun.
The fall. I mean, fall is fun. But I want it to be 70 degrees and sunny when I play Frisbee.
But you hate the hotness of summer.
I know, I do.
You want Indian summer year-long or spring.
Mm-hmm. I want it to be 70 degrees, sunny, partly cloudy. So all the time.
To California.
Is that right? Okay, mm-hmm. Done. I will play Frisbee every day of the year.
You could.
Then I would pull my groin constantly. Okay. Anyways, this is another beautiful summer's day.
I would move to California with you.
I think that would be nice. Not Southern California, though.
No.
Maybe like San Francisco. Well, that'll be rainy a lot.
No, you don't want that far north.
I want, what, San Fernando?
Mm. Yeah.
Because Los Angeles is too hot.
No, it's not.
It isn't? Los Angeles is really hot all the time. It's all smoggy. I don't want to live in Los Angeles. Okay. He supposed that Privet Drive would be hot and leafy. How about San Diego?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good.
Just like the sound of that word, San Diego. It's flower beds in a riot of color when he arrived there that evening. The thought gave him no pleasure at all. Harry! He looked around. I said it in the wrong voice.
You said it Hagrid.
Yeah. Harry! He looked around. Fleur Delacour was hurrying up the stone steps into the castle. Beyond her, far across the grounds, Harry could see Hagrid helping Madame Maxime to the back, to
Beauxbatons.
Oh, that's okay. Harry could see Hagrid helping Madame Maxime to back two of the giant horses into their harness. The Beauxbatons carriage was about to take off. "We will see each other again, I hope," said Fleur as she reached him, holding out her hand. "I'm hoping to get a job here to improve my English."
Kind of German, but okay.
"It's very good already," said Ron in a strangled sort of voice. Fleur smiled at him. Hermione scowled. "Goodbye, Harry," said Fleur, turning to go. "It has been a pleasure meeting you." Harry's spirits couldn't help but lift slightly as he watched Fleur hurrying back across the lawns to Madame Maxime, her silvery hair rippling in the sunlight. That's what Harry was looking at.
You don't ever look at my hair? Come on, he could have been looking at her hair.
"Wonder how the Durmstrang students are getting back," said Ron. "Do you reckon they can steer the ship without Karkaroff?"
"Karkaroff did not steer," said a gruff voice. "He stayed in his cabin and let us do the work."
Crumb had come to say goodbye to Hermione.
Good morning.
Good morning.
"Could I have a word?" he asked her.
"Oh, yes. All right," said Hermione, looking slightly flustered and following Crumb through the crowd and up out of sight. "You better hurry up," Ron called loudly after her. "The carriages will be here in a minute." He let Harry keep a watch for the carriages, however, and spent the next few minutes craning his neck over the crowd to try to see what Crumb and Hermione might be up to. They returned quite soon. Ron stared at Hermione, but her face was quite impassive.
"I like Diggory," said Crumb abruptly to Harry. "He was always polite to me. Always. Even though I was from Durmstrang with Karkaroff," he added, scowling.
"Have you got a new headmaster yet?" said Harry. Crumb shrugged. He held out his hand as Fleur had done, shook Harry's hand, and then Ron's. Ron looked as though he were suffering some sort of painful internal struggle. Crumb had already started walking away when Ron burst out. "Can I have your autograph?" Hermione turned away, smiling at the horseless carriages that were now trundling up toward them up the drive. as Crumb, looking surprised but gratified, signed a fragment of parchment for Ron. The weather could not have been more different on the journey back to King's Cross than it had been on their way to Hogwarts the previous
week. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, here's a really big hole in her writing. Okay. Yeah. The horseless carriages. By now, Harry would be able to see the Thestrals.
Oh, because he had just seen. Mm-hmm. You are right.
And actually, he should have been able to see them the whole time because he saw his mother die.
Yeah. I think you're right. Is it the same carriages?
Yep.
When does he see them?
Next book.
You sure? Mm-hmm. I thought he saw them already in book three.
Mm-mm. He sees them in the next book because Luna Lovegood says that she can see them too and he thinks he's crazy. Ah.
You're right then. There wasn't a single cloud in the sky. Harry, Ron, and Hermione had managed to get a compartment to themselves. Pidwidgeon was once again hidden under Ron's dress robes to stop him from hooting continually. Hedwig was dozing, her head under her wing, and Crookshanks was curled up in a spare seat, like a large, fluffy ginger cushion. Is that like you're curled up?
Harry, I'm not ginger.
You're not ginger, because you don't like gingers.
And I'm not.
You're not. Harry, Ron, and Hermione talked more fully and freely than they had all week as the train sped southward. Harry felt as though Dumbledore's speech at the Leaving Feast had unblocked him somehow. It was less painful to discuss what had happened now. They broke off their conversation about what action Dumbledore might be taking, even now, to stop Voldemort, only when the lunch trolley arrived. When Hermione returned from the trolley and put her money back into her school bag, she dislodged a copy of the Daily Prophet that she'd been carrying in there. Harry looked at it, unsure whether he really wanted to know what it might say, but Hermione, seeing him looking at it, said calmly, "There's nothing in there. You can look for yourself. There's nothing at all. I've been checking. Every day. Just a small piece the day after the third task saying you won this tournament. They didn't even mention Cedric. Nothing about it. If you ask me, Fudge is forcing them to keep quiet." "He'll never keep Rita quiet," said Harry. "Not as a story like that." "Oh, Rita hasn't written a word, written anything at all since the third task," said Hermione in an oddly constrained sort of voice. "As a matter of fact," she added, her voice now trembling slightly, "Rita Skeeter isn't going to be writing anything at all for a while, not unless she wants me to spill the beans on her." "What are you talking about?" said Ron. "I found out she was listening in on private conversations when she wasn't supposed to be coming onto the grounds," said Hermione in a rush. Harry had the impression that Hermione had been dying to tell them this for days, but that she had restrained herself in light of everything else that had happened. "How was she doing it?" said Ron at once. "How did you find out?" said Harry, staring at her. "Well, it was you, really, who gave me the idea, Harry," she said. "Did I?" said Harry, perplexed. "How?" "Bugging," said Hermione happily. "But you said they didn't work." "Oh, not electronic bugs," said Hermione. "No, you see, Rita Skeeter," Hermione's voice trembled with quiet triumph, "is an unregistered animagus. She can turn." Hermione pulled a small sealed glass jar out of her bag into a beetle. "You're kidding," said Ron. "You haven't. She's not." "Oh, yes, she is," said Hermione happily.
This is like the really worst thing that Hermione ever does, and it's awesome.
Brandishing a jar at them. Inside were a few twigs and leaves, and one large, fat beetle. "That's never... You're kidding," said Ron. "Achoo!" Ow. Lifting the jar to his eyes. "No, I'm not," said Hermione, beaming. "I caught her on the windowsill in the hospital wing. Look very closely. You'll notice the markings around her antenna are exactly like those fall glasses she wears." Harry looked and saw that she was quite right. He also remembered something. There was something about the statue. There was a beetle on the statue the night we heard Hagrid telling Madame Maxime about his mum. "Exactly," said Hermione. and Victor pulled a beetle out of my hair after we'd had our conversation by that lake. And unless I'm very much mistaken, Rita was perched on a windowsill of the divination class the day your scar hurt. She's been buzzing around for stories all year. When we saw Malfoy under that tree, Ron said slowly. He was talking to her in his hand, said Hermione. He knew, of course. That's how she's been getting all those little nice interviews from the Slytherins. They wouldn't care she was doing something illegal as long as they were giving her horrible stuff about us and Hagrid. Hermione took the glass jar back from Ron and smiled at the beetle, which buzzed angrily around the glass. I've told her I'll let her out when we get back to London, said Hermione. I've put an unbreakable charm on the jar, so she can't transform. And I've told her she has to keep her quill to herself for a whole year, see if she can't break the habit of writing horrible lies about people. Smiling serenely. So what's she going to do after that year? I mean, I guess nothing happens, but... Hermione placed the beetle back in her school bag. The door of the compartment slid open. Very clever, Granger, said Draco Malfoy. Crabbe and Goyle were standing behind him. All three of them were looking more pleased with themselves, more arrogant and menacing than Harry had ever seen. So, said Malfoy slowly, advancing slightly into the compartment and looking slowly around at them, a smirk quavering on his lips. You caught some pathetic reporter and Potter's Dumbledore's favorite boy again. Big deal. His smirk widened. Crabbe and Goyle leered. Trying not to think about it, are we? Said Malfoy, softly looking around at all three of them, trying to pretend it isn't happened. Get out, said Harry. He had not been this close to Malfoy since he had watched him muttering to Crabbe and Goyle during Dumbledore's speech about Cedric. He could feel a kind of ringing in his ears. His hand gripped his wands under his robes. You've picked the losing side, Potter. I warned you. I told you you ought to choose your company more carefully, remember? When we met on the train, first day at Hogwarts, I told you not to hang around with a riffraff like this. He jerked his head around at Hermione. Too late now, Potter. They'll be the first to go now that the Dark Lord's back. Mudbugs and muggle lovers first. Well, second, Diggory was the first. Someone had exploded a box of fireworks within the compartment. Blinded by the blaze of spells that had blasted from every direction, deafened by a series of bangs, Harry blinked and looked down at the floor. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle were all lying unconscious in the doorway. He, Ron, and Hermione were on their feet, all three of them having used a different hex, nor were they the only ones to have done so. Thought we'd go see what those three were up to, said Fred, in a matter-of-fact voice, stepping onto Goyle and onto the compartment. He had his wand out, and so did George, who was careful to tread on Malfoy as he followed Fred inside. Interesting effect, said George, looking down at Crabbe. Who used the furnunculus curse? Me, said Harry. Odd, said George lightly. I used jelly legs. Looks as though those two shouldn't be mixed. He seems to have sprouted little tentacles all over his face. Well, let's not leave them here. They don't add much to the decor. Ron, Harry, and George kicked, rolled, and pushed the unconscious Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, each of whom looked distinctly the worse for the jumble of jinxes which they had been hit, out into the corridor, and they came back into the compartment and rolled the door shut. Exploding snap, anyone? Said Fred, pulling out a pack of cards. They were halfway through their fifth game when Harry decided to ask them. You're going to tell us, then, he said to George, who you were blackmailing? Oh, said George darkly, that. It doesn't matter, said Fred, shaking his head impatiently. It wasn't anything important, not now, anyway. We've given up, said George, shrugging. But Harry, Ron, and Hermione kept on asking. And finally, Fred said, all right, if you really want to know, it was Ludo Bagman. Bagman, said Harry sharply. Are you saying he was involved in... Nah, said George gloomily. Nothing like that. Stupid kid. He wouldn't have had the brains.
With what then? Said Ron. Fred hesitated and said, you remember that bet we had with him at the Quidditch World Cup? That Ireland would win, but Crumb would get the snitch. Yeah, said Ron and Harry slowly. Well, the git paid us in a leprechaun gold he caught from the Irish mascots. So, said Fred impatiently, it vanished, didn't it? But the next morning it had gone. But it must have been an accident, must it? Said Hermione. George laughed very bitterly. Yeah, that's what we thought at first. We thought if we just wrote him and told him he'd made a mistake, he'd cough up. But nothing doing. Ignored our letter. We kept trying to talk to him about it at Hogwarts, but he was always making some excuse to get away. In the end, he turned pretty nasty, said Fred. Told us we were too young to gamble. But he wasn't giving us anything. So we asked for our money back, said George, glowering. He didn't refuse, gasped Hermione. Right in one, said Fred. That was all your savings, said Ron. Tell me about it, said George. Of course, we found out what was going on in the end. Lee Jordan's dad had a bit of trouble getting money off Bagman as well. Turns out he's in big trouble with goblins, borrowed loads of gold off them. A gang of them cornered him in the woods after the World Cup and took off all the gold he had, and it still wasn't enough to cover all his debts. They followed him all the way to Hogwarts to keep an eye on him. He's lost everything gambling. Hasn't got 2 galleons to rub together. And you know how the idiot tried to pay the goblins back? How, said Harry. He put a bet on you, mate. Put a big bet on you to win the tournament. Bet against the goblins. So that's why he kept trying to help me win, said Harry. Well, I did win, didn't I? So he can pay you your gold. Nope, said George, shaking his head. The goblins play as dirty as him. They say you drew with Diggory, and Bagman was betting you'd win outright. So Bagman had to run for it. He did run for it right after the third task. George sighed deeply and started dealing the cards again. The rest of the journey passed pleasantly enough. Harry wished it could have gone on all summer. In fact, that he would never have to arrive at King's Cross. But he had learned the hard way that year. Time will not slow down when something unpleasant lies ahead, and all too soon, Hogwarts Express was pulling in at platform 9 3/4. The usual confusion and noise filled the corridors as the students began to disembark. Ron and Hermione struggled out past Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, carrying their trunks. Harry, however, stayed put. Fred, George, wait a moment. The twins turned. Harry pulled open his trunk and drew out his Triwizard winnings. Take it, he said, and he thrust the sack into George's hands. What? Said Fred, looking flabbergasted. Take it, Harry repeated firmly. I don't want it. You're mental, said George, trying to push it back at Harry. No, I'm not, said Harry. You take it and get inventing. It's for the joke shop. He is mental, said Fred in an almost awed voice. Listen, said Harry firmly. If you don't take it, I'm throwing it down the drain. I don't want it, I don't need it. But I could do with a few laughs. We all could do with a few laughs. I've got a feeling we're going to need them more than usual before long. Harry, said George weakly, weighing the money bag in his hands. It's got to be 1,000 galleons in here. Yeah, said Harry, grinning. Think of how many canary creams that is. The twins stared at him. Just don't tell your mum where you got it, although she might not be so keen for you to join the ministry anymore, come to think of it. Harry, Fred began, but Harry pulled out his wand. Look, he said flatly, take it or I'll hex you. I know some good ones now. Just do me one favor, okay? Buy Ron some different dress robes and say they're from you. He left the compartment before they could say another word, stepping over Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, who were still lying on the floor, covered in hex marks. Uncle Vernon was waiting for him beyond the barrier. Mrs. Weasley was close by him. She hugged Harry very tightly when she saw him and whispered in his ear, I think Dumbledore will come let you stay with us later in the summer. Keep in touch, Harry. See you, Harry, said Ron, clapping him on the back. Bye, Harry, said Hermione, and she did something she had never done before, and kissed him on the cheek. Harry, thanks, George muttered, and Fred nodded fervently at his side. Harry winked at them, turned to Uncle Vernon and followed him silently from the station. There was no point in worrying yet, he told himself, as he got into the back of the Dursley's car. As Hagrid had said, what would come, and he would have to meet it when it did. And that is the end of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. I hope you liked that, my kitty. We read the whole book. You're a very sweet girl. Say goodnight.
I'm gonna say goodnight for real too.
Okay. Goodnight. Goodnight, Carrie Boo.